You're listening to the Mixtape Preservation Society. I'm your host, BJ Fornicati. Welcome to the first episode with special guest Indianapolis EDM heavy bass jungle and hip hop DJ Gin XS. Because this is the first episode, let me tell you how we do this mixtape preservation shit. I used to make mixtapes for my homie. I used to make mixtapes for the people on the block. So this is just a reconstruction of the good old days. No wack bullshit. Don't act like you don't know about this. Don't front on me. So without further ado, strap yourself in. It's gonna be a bumpy ride.
You're so lovely. Your mouth is so sweet. A lot of people misunderstand me. That's because they don't know me at all. I just want to touch you and hold you. I need you. God, I need you. I love you so much.
Price play boy 100 piece. 100 piece. shit. I go figure that daddy no more worse than cloning sheep. Just understand, I does this for my weeks. More hair on my face than my daddy did. I guess it's them steroids that they been putting in our food. Shit, the man behind the counter at the liquor store asks him for ID before he get to ask me. And if he asks me for ID, then I'ma get to kissing the bitch and use some of that swindling ass fast talking con man, inner city, ghetto, urban, reverse psychology. Niggas got it tough out here. Nigga out here is rough. Niggas got it rough out here. Nigga out here is rough. Listen to L.I.Q. Listen to liquor stuff. Listen to L.I.Q. Listen to house party. Listen to L.I.Q. Well, I'm sideways, doing about a buck 50. Listen to Wayne Spot. Listen to L.I.Q. Hello, my friend. What's up, a dude? Give me a pack of sunflower seeds and a box of larger size Magnum rubbers, a generic lemon squeeze, lime juice, and a bottle of gold blood. A pack of licorice liquor and lock them zigzags, and a hard boiled egg and a pickle pig feet. Shit, I gotta do as much fucking important as I can. I gotta go turn myself in next week. I'm up all night. Yeah, what you gonna be doing up at somebody's eye to lay him pop? Bitch, you talking about someone and try to accuse your ass of rape? Cause you rap. Cause you rap. Saha, I ain't even trying to entertain you. Yeah, I get up in more house than a dog ball. Pussy falling all out of my Granada. Squads in Kansas City. Squads in Colorado. Learns how to pop my collar in the city where they shot the Mac. To owe some of the players that helped tie my shoes and lace me. Name was Curtis and B.O. I'm gonna get up through the dope cups. Cafeo. Messy and tap that ass. Kiwi and hella mo. Big ass niggas like Be Legit and on me. ZQ Vend. I kept in the Mac. Mac D shot in Little Bruce. Listen to L.I.Q. Listen to liquor stuff. Listen to L.I.Q. Listen to house party. Listen to L.I.Q. Well, I'm sideways, doing about a buck 50. Listen to Wayne Spot. Listen to L.I.Q. Listen to liquor stuff. Listen to L.I.Q. Listen to house party. Listen to L.I.Q. Well, I'm sideways, doing about a buck 50. On the dope track with a bass hit, becoming coming. I see more killings and more hop than the kangaroo. My baby's mama, she's sick, she on that glass. Be crawling all on the rug, looking for that shit. Hogan High School prime queen ride. On her hands and knees, picking up Latin, anything that's wild. That's how you can tell that the dope fiend's gone special when they get there. Looking all out the curtains with their high beats on the corner. We got a dice game unfolding. And one of my dudes, seriously, he rolling. Then a couple of fools pull up and rip for their cigars. With the digital split in my wig, but they winded up getting reversed. I let they die crying. Family grind, witnesses, they suck. A prime example of bad karma, Murphy's Law. If you gon' be a fool, then be a fool, shit. But just know when to act a fool and who to act a fool with. Listen to L.I.Q. Listen to liquor stuff. Listen to L.I.Q. Listen to house party. Listen to L.I.Q. Well, I'm sideways, doing about a buck 50. Listen to Wayne Spot. Listen to L.I.Q. Listen to liquor stuff. Listen to L.I.Q. Listen to house party. Listen to L.I.Q. Well, I'm sideways, doing about a buck 50.
Shit!
I don't care. Call the cops.
Mob shit.
I don't care.
Mob shit will never fall. Mob shit don't always sail through.
That's that fella. Shit that like bitch ass.
What mob shit do?
All mob shit do is cop people. I'm in this bitch.
How you do that
like
shit? Was that a voice box?
That shit that get a nigga crock right there. That's that shit that'll get a nigga buck on they whole ass. Mob that shit out, nigga. Bosco. Mob that shit. They ain't knowing. See, I spit that shit too. Look here. Make that shit go like this here.
Dude, that's Michael's hooks, his sensitivity. That's what women be saying. Michael's just so sensitive. And they eat that shit up. Mike know too. He be using women in concerts. I seen Mike walk up to girls and they stay being the audience. He say, "Is it all right if I come down there and sing to you?" And the women go, "Ah!" Then if you don't scream, Mike will get real sensitive and cry on your ass. If you hear that record, "She's Out of My Life," Mike will go,
"So I've learned that love's not possession. And I've learned to love one way." Love needs expression, but I learned to
Tito, get me some tissue. Jermaine, stop teasing.
Hey!
You're listening to the Mixtape Preservation Society. I'm your host, BJ Fornicati. That first cut was Agent Orange, Bloodstains, off their first album. Second cut, L.I.Q. by Charlie Hustle himself, E-40. We're going to get back into the music mix, and then a little later we're going to talk with our friend DJ Gen XS, about the state of electronic music and hip-hop in today's day and age. So it's only appropriate that maybe the next couple of songs would be more on the dance tip. So, Michael, why don't you do us the honors and introduce this next block?
That's right, the gate's open. We're going back inside one more time. One more time. For one more bass. One more rhyme. One more beat. And one more sign. The gate's open. Step through. Download the fresh tracks now. I believe it's long overdue. Tell me how. Set to explode your venue. So get all in line. The next set direct. Headed for your chest and your neck. I will proceed to lead the advance until we totally bust the whole dance. Go deep. Way beyond the point of cold heat. It stays sweet. Do every level rider to the peak. I'm tired. Hit you with that raw bass line. Of course I devour and force some more minds. Some panic. Don't recognize, but unsafe, they feel static. Get the money started, they say I can't have it. I need full-fledged music makers. A prime ever-ready, strong firm of creators. And I got that. That's why this beat sounds so live. This is the format. Something you all should recognize.
Damn. I'm a crazy motherfucker. God damn it. Oh, shit.
To the Mixtape Preservation Society. I'm BJ Fornicati. I'm your host on this journey. Listening to some Dom and Roland, Ode to Don Juan by The Art of Noise. It's off The Art of Noise Drum and Bass Collection. It's just a sampler of different remixes by drum and bass artists. I love Art of Noise. I've always dug their stuff, and so if you can find a copy of this CD, I highly recommend it. This last segment that I just played, as you can tell, is a lot of old school drum and bass and jungle. I used to hate this shit, and somebody put me onto it years ago, probably while I was doing a hit of ecstasy. And after that, I was just into it. Now, I'm no specialist on this. We're actually going to speak with a specialist in a little bit. But before we do that, let me tell you what songs we played. For the uninitiated, first track I busted out was Ronnie Size and Represent. First track off that album, Railing Part 2, classic. Then I segued into the Aphrodite remix of NWA's Gangsta Gangsta. This was the club edition, so it ran about 6 minutes plus. That might be the very track that turned my head around when it came to electronic music. You know, back then it was all acid jazz and electronica. It's just all these different names. And the music has changed a lot since. I'm not really up with the most current stuff, but once again, I rely on the specialists for that stuff. But yeah, that's some pretty old school shit I was busting out there. You know, in 2011, when I moved out to Indianapolis from Los Angeles, a lot of people thought, what the fuck is wrong with you, Fornicati? Why would you do something as stupid as that? And that's a long story, and I really don't have time to tell you about that. Maybe some other day. But needless to say, I was out in the middle of nowhere. I ended up putting down my roots musically in a bunch of different areas. I joined some bands, did some open mics, found some places where people were jamming out, rehearsal studios, started rebuilding my home studio, and talking with DJs. And one of those people that I was fortunate enough to meet, a DJ by the name of Gin XS. Cat's got a lot of knowledge, and he and I caught up one day, had lunch, sort of like a comedians in cars getting coffee, Jerry Seinfeld type of vibe. We drove down to the Castleton Square Mall, went to the food court, and just rapped about some shit. So what you're about to hear is that interview. Yeah, that's basically it. So without further ado, let me put on the interview and you can take a listen to it. And then afterwards, I'll play you some of Gin XS's mixes. I'll play you some stuff from the man himself and see what you think. So here we go. All right, we're sitting here with Nate Cancilla, a.k.a. DJ Gin XS. Do you want me to call you Nate or do you want me to call you Gin XS?
I don't care.
Before we start really rapping, I just want to say that when I first saw your name, I thought it was DJ Jinx.
Uh-huh.
Do you get that a lot?
Do. Yeah.
Where does the name Gin XS come from?
My graffiti tag in high school. Never thought I would take it anywhere, so I started using my DJ name because I'd used it as like a handle and shit online. And next thing you know, I'm getting booked, and just end up keeping it, I guess. It's unique. Nobody else has it, so...
You ever thought about changing it? Like, you ever thought, man...
Yeah, but, you know, I'm not small enough or big enough to pull it off. If I was too small, you know, or if I was smaller earlier in my career or something, you know, I could change it and it wouldn't affect it. Or if I was big enough name that people would know that I changed it universally, but, you know, I'm kind of in that medium gray area.
Okay.
So, it's all right. I'll keep it.
How long have you been performing as a DJ in Indianapolis?
A decade professionally. I've been a DJ it's about 99, but I was a bedroom DJ, you know, for years, just going to shows, and it took forever to get my foot in the door because it was a different scene then. But you know.
How different from now?
Well, you know, there was a kind of a crash, I would say, of the rave scene in 2001, and I started going to other types of shows with DJs, hip-hop, and, you know, I was always a big hip-hop head, and industrial shows, and I actually got my foot in the door because of the industrial scene to some extent. It's definitely got a lot of roots there, but, you know, it was just, electronic music was on a really bad down swing, and it wasn't popular, and raves, you know, had been more or less banned in Indianapolis, let alone a lot of places in the country. So everything went to bars, you know, or concerts, and even then, like, this wasn't popular until, you know, mid to late 2000s when electro house and dubstep became big.
What was your first paid professional DJ gig? Do you remember it? Do you remember what it was? Or
I don't. It would have been... In my first year, I definitely did some paid gigs. Remember doing just some mobile spot shows here and there, mostly. Nothing, you know, a lot of the performances, the weeklies I was doing, I didn't get much of anything for. I started at a residency in 08, a place downtown called Living Room Lounge, and we did a Monday. That actually drew pretty good because they did $2 pitchers, and that was basically why anybody was there, but we weren't really making any money on it. It was just something that the bar had us doing, let us do, and it gave us a chance to perform and bring friends along. And
is that venue still around?
Yeah. They don't do DJ night. They're mostly known for, like, karaoke.
Oh, okay. Well, that brings us up to another subject out here. You know, I'm originally from L.A., and it's a different scene in L.A., obviously. I see some pros and cons out here. The biggest pro I see is that when you do get paid, people will, you know, they'll pay you for your time, whereas in L.A., it's a lot of, hey, exposure, or this will look great on your IMDb page or whatever.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
But the cons, you know, from our conversations we've had off the record, you know, I don't want you to necessarily name names or anything like that, but it seems to me like there's a lot of promotion problems out here.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that, you know, there's very much money. You know, you do get paid here and there, but
there's no pay to play, though, like in L.A. Like you.
Oh, no, I refuse to do ever pay to play anywhere. You book me or you don't, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, we don't have that issue really here. There's only one venue I could think of that's kind of notorious for doing that, and you know, it's nice. It's, you know, it's your merits. You get booked because the promoter thinks you're good enough to be on a show. That being said, I just don't think there's very much money. You know, I don't get paid on a lot of stuff. It is, I wouldn't say I'm being told, oh, you get for exposure. It's just more that I'm kind of just doing it because it's something you enjoy, and the
right,
money,
but there,
there isn't a whole lot of money there unless you want to go do clubs or something like
that.
But
at the same time, there's not an active exploitation of it either. Like in L.A., people just assume you'll do it for free.
Yeah.
Even if, you know, even if you are an established act, people will just assume you're doing it for free. Whereas out here, I think the approach is more like, yeah, if you want to, you can. We just can't pay you a lot, but what do you say? And then it's up to you. You know, you don't, you know, and I think it's, because it's not as big as L.A., it's almost like a big fish in a little pond type of situation.
I would say here, you know, some promoters get a lot of flack for, oh, they don't pay for this event or that event. But in my terms with things, like, if I work and do stuff with promotion, you know, yeah, I don't get paid on some stuff. But if I come and do it, on the flip, they'll have something bigger at some point that they will book me on because they utilized me before and I didn't make a fight about money, you know. And then I'll get paid on those bigger shows, you know. And it's dependent on things like equipment. Like if you have a setup at your event and all I got to do is bring a controller and plug into, I'm not as worried about money as much as I would if I have to lug equipment, or especially my, you know, techs and
right,
you know, Serato box and mixer and all that stuff, and set all that up, tear it down.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a lot.
That's when, you know, you really should pay something, you know, and that.
Have you ever had people, like, volunteer to help you with your gear, roadies or groupies or whatever, who are like, hey, you know, they just want to be close to it?
I mean, I have friends that'll come along with me, or women or whatever. You know, like, yeah, you know, they'll help me carry stuff, but I don't really have, like, people coming up like, I'm not that important, I guess, where it's like, yeah, let me carry those for you, sir.
Well, you seem to have a following, and I want to touch upon your appearance. You know, for people listening to the podcast, they don't know what you look like. On stage, you rock vampire style. Like, you know,
vampire chic.
Yeah, vampire chic. And no pointy ears, but it's kind of like a Nosferatu style. Like, contacts, you know, fangs. You've got you know, the esoteric tats on the arm. You got a very distinct look. When did you come up with this look? How long into the game?
I mean, like, let's be fair. I mean, like, I didn't come up with anything in the sense that, like, I'm just dressing like vampire. I mean, I have my own kind of, like...
I mean, were you dressing like a vampire before you became a DJ? Or?
No, not at all.
When did you first rock it on stage, and what was the reaction you got?
I started doing fangs in about 2012, and I got the eyes at the end of 2012. And so it's been consistent ever since then. But, I mean, I've always had that background with the industrial scene. I am big on the occult. And it was just kind of a... changing up my style over time and wanting to do something different. And, you know, no lie, it brings attention to what I do. It's not the only reason I do it, but it certainly helps. I can be a pretty introverted person, so anything I can do to bring people to me, to talk to me, as opposed to me having to approach strangers is always nice. You know, I'm not a big people person sometimes, so
it's definitely memorable.
And you know, they won't forget who I am. There's nobody else in indie rock. And
I brought a buddy of mine, Jeremiah Cosner, who I'm going to interview for the podcast at a later date. I brought him to, I think you were spinning at the Vogue one night.
Yeah.
There was an event event at the Vogue. We just walked in because we were actually at the Wild Beaver around the corner. And then we were bored, and I was like, my boy's spinning over at the Vogue. And he really dug your look. I just remember that, like when I bring it up to him today, like when I say DJ Gen XS, oh yeah, the vampire guy. And so it does work. Have you ever had like a negative reaction, like somebody who just thought you were satanic or?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like, I mean, anybody like step out of line with it or?
I mean, nothing confrontational. I've had. I remember one girl accused me of being entertaining demons at one point, which I was like, okay, that's not entirely wrong, but she was like super Christian or something.
Right. We're in the Midwest, kind of so like. In L.A., you know, that kind of style, you know, to be honest, I don't know how it would take off in L.A. A lot of people dress like that regularly, but at the same time, a lot of performers don't.
Well, the thing about the way with me is, I mean, you'd be surprised. I can go into a regular bar dressed like that, and it's all about how you carry yourself. I wouldn't do it if I didn't think I had the confidence to pull it off, because I think there's that stigma. You know, you have the brooding goth-looking dude in the corner. You know, he may be wearing the same outfit, but if he's just kind of, like, meme-mugging or, like, isolating himself, then he's going to be the perception that he, you know, he becomes the perception that he's putting out. I'm confident about it.
Do you feel like it brings out more confidence?
Because then it's cyclical. Anything like psychologically like that just feeds on itself, positive or negative. You know, you get yourself into a frame of mind. And I've always been good at that, for better or worse, is like I can sustain thought processes pretty good. So for that, you know, it's all about how you carry yourself. You know, I there was a few years ago, the first year I started doing it, I played the Coke lot at the 500, which, if people don't know what that is, when they do the Indy 500 the weekend before, they basically more or less make a shanty town.
Yeah.
It's just tons of RVs and cars and tents and people. Just this massive lot that's owned by Coca-Cola. Probably, you know, several tens of thousands of people crammed in this area, and there's stages. And, you know, I don't think there's very few that are probably even official. Just ours was just, we went and set up a stage. And so, you know, I go walking into this field of you know, drunk, you know, rural America, you know, bros and stuff, and, like, just walk through it like I own the place, you know? Not to sound super cocky, but, I mean, just walk in like you're there with a purpose. And that goes so far. People are coming up to me, dudes, you know, frat boy looking, you know, like, bro, what's up with you, look, da-da-da. And, you know, I'm telling them, oh, you know, I'm playing the stage over here. You like dubstep? Come check it out. We got some dubstep DJs. I'm doing some heavy bass set. And they're like, cool, you know. It's all about how you carry yourself. If you carry yourself confidently, very few people. I rarely have, you know, knock on wood, but I rarely have anybody messing with me or asking me about it. People give me kind of weird looks. They're like, what the fuck, you know. But
I think once people figure out that you're an artist, then then they could swallow it a little bit more. I remember when I was a road manager with this company that, I'm not going to say any names, but it was a boy group that was signed to like a family label, but nobody really knew who they were. We went to an Applebee's in New York to get something to eat, and after about 10 minutes, people started coming up and asking for autographs, but nobody knew who they were.
They were somebody.
Right. They just knew that they were performers. Mm-hmm. They saw the van. They saw that they were dressed. They had just done a performance at a middle school. So it's not like, you know, they were like on this huge tour. They're at a middle school and they did this performance and people were coming up. Some people said like, oh, are you new kids on the block? Are you Backstreet Boys? And they took it with, you know, with a grain of salt. You know, they know that they're going to get that. but they were real gracious, and they gave, you know, we gave out merchandise or whatever. And I thought it was interesting that 9 out of 10 people didn't know who they were, but they saw that, like you said, they carried themselves a certain way. You can almost smell, I guess, the performance on them.
Right.
And that's what people were responding
and I
to.
I like playing with people's perceptions. Not to sound manipulative, I mean more like just, you see somebody like me when I'm dressed up, and you have your assumption of who this person is and how they're going to behave. So one, my behavior kind of flies in the face of that, like being a very positive, energetic, happy person, you know, who dresses like a freak. But, you know, the other thing is like, you know, you see somebody like me, it's like, oh, he's going to get up there and he's going to play industrial, he's going to play metal, something harsh, and then I get in there and do a hip-hop set. You know, like, I love playing with perceptions, you know, giving people, throwing people kind of fastballs, you know,
Yeah. Changing
people's ideas, you know, because there's one thing that I'm the odd man out on hip-hop is the hip-hop fashion. Like, I've just never really cared for traditional hip-hop stylings. I don't care for the hats, and that's just me. It's not knocking on anybody, but it's not me anymore. And there was a time maybe when I was younger I would rock more traditional stuff, but like, I love the industrial style, you know, I love playing up that in my own thing. And I just think that, you know, you don't have to conform into any one.
No, that's,
wear what you want.
Right.
Don't go by what Kanye or whatever is trying to sell you on TV. Just fucking do you.
A while back, I met Hugh Jeffner for the first time. Hugh Jeffner's awesome. Maybe one day I can get him to do a podcast interview, because he had a lot of knowledge to drop. And I asked him about his wardrobe, because he wears like old school metal and rock and roll shirts. You know, you would think that he was like some guy who's in the 90s rock. I think at the time, I forgot what he was wearing. It was something like Cradle of Filth or...
Like, probably loves that stuff too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He said he grew up skateboarding, and that was the stuff he listened to. And sometimes he throws a little bit into it, but if you listen to what he spins, there's, you know, you might find a trace of it, but for the most part, it's dance music. It's what people are listening to right now, EDM. But yeah, I think you get a lot more of that out here in Indianapolis. I think LA is a trendy place.
Yep.
So people want to... They're going to, if you had an agent in LA, they'd probably tell you, Jin, you need to wear the Kangols and I don't know what's the big clothing line right now. I'll just say Rockaware.
I know.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
I order all my shirts online. I buy regular ass.
You need to wear the Adidas tracksuit, you know?
Couturements to go with my gear.
You need a Gucci, a Dookie rope chain or whatever. And like, yeah, that's just not your style. And I think people, they vibe off of that because people can tell if you're genuine or not. Even if you're putting on contacts and fangs, that's what you want to do. Now that we're on the hip-hop tip, and before we take off, and we talk about this a lot, you and I, who are your top five wackest hip-hop artists? Who do you think are the wackest?
If I get to go into mumble rap territory or not. I mean,
do what you want. Just say what you want.
I try to keep an open mind. There is some stuff I think is okay, but all that mumble rap bullshit is just hype marketing and no real substance underneath. I would try to stay on a more semi-traditional tip. I think Drake is the most overrated. I mean, like, Drake has ghostwriters and stuff, and he still like spits rhymes that aren't anything special and are repetitive. It's like, Shaq was a better rapper than Drake. John Cena could write his own rhymes, you know? So Drake would probably be on there just for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. And it's not like hatred. It's not like you want to see them fail. It's just
it's just
personal
taste.
I think
that hype marketing machine, like, it feeds on itself. Like anything else, it just get that ball rolling. So I think the one, Lil Wayne is just, I'm the king of rap. So no, you're not. He got lucky. He worked with the right people, especially with, like, the Carter 3 and got the right producers. And, you know, producers take places, man. That's what hip-hop's all about, is production, first and foremost. You could be the wackest rapper in the world, but, you know, get Kanye to do a decent beat for you, and it makes all the difference.
So like you're saying, if MC Paul Barman worked with Kanye, like, he would just be blowing up.
Yeah, you know my shit. Barman worked with Doom on Doom, did some production for him, so I mean, yeah, go
he's worked
way.
With Danny Automator.
You know, like, Young Thug. I'm gonna throw that in. I'm gonna throw a mumble rapper out. Young Thug. I don't get it. I found some entertaining things about Yachty. I mean, he's terrible, but like, there's something like almost avant-garde about some of his nonsense. Migos, I guess, maybe if you squint, there's some good things in there. I just can't stand Young Thug. I don't know, Lil Jon was pretty awful. I mean, he's fun. He had some fun thing. I like playing with his stuff, like EDM and stuff, but doing mashups, but he's pretty whack. I mean, there's no talent there. Other than he's a hype man that became a front man somehow. So giving Flavor Flav the leads of Public Enemy. Doesn't make much sense, but okay. Or no, even better, Griff. Like, yeah, let's let Griff be the head of this album. So that would be four. One more. He's terrible. I won't say he's terrible. I think Kendrick Lamar is one of the most overrated rappers right now. I'm sure everybody will just hate on me for saying that.
Well, no, there's really a lot of division right now about Kendrick.
Like,
you know,
he reminds me of, like, some of his styles kind of remind me of Bone Thugs. And Bone Thugs were good. They're different, but they're good. They have really good that fast pace. But I just don't see what's, you know, you put him in this legendary kind of feel, and then you put him up against people who are actually, you know, like, I was never the biggest Eminem fan, but I totally understand why Eminem was considered one of the greatest. It's all about wordplay, lyricism, stuff. And I just don't see that the guy like Kendrick. I'm not saying he's not talented. I'm just saying he's overrated. Incredibly overrated. He's got some good production. You know, he's good at what kind of hip-hop he's doing, but just...
I think right now he's poised to carry the mantle. Somebody told me that on the new album he does a duet with Bono, and that kind of kills it for me, you know? But I'll still listen to it.
Like U2, I just hate Bono. Right. I understand U2's really overrated, too.
Right, he ruins everything. I was telling someone the other day, Bono ruins everything. If something's cool, he'll be on the documentary for it, and then you just don't want to do it anymore.
Yep.
You know? We'll continue this in the car, but let's move it.
Why have you come here? To bring a gift, Your Highness. To someone as beautiful as you. You think me beautiful? Very beautiful within, Your Highness, but without a key to unlock it. And that is my gift to you. So, let me see this gift. Not only see, Your Highness, but hear.
And now for something completely different.
Genesis.
Yes, you're listening to the Mixtape Preservation Society with BJ Fornicati. This is a mix right now that you're listening to, done by DJ Gen XS from his CD, The Sigil Sessions 1. If you'd like to hear more of Gen XS's mixes and creations, I'm going to let the man himself tell you where the links are. Gen, if you don't mind.
All my music pretty much is on Hear This. .at/GenXS, J-I-N-XS. I still have my SoundCloud, but a lot of that's just my EP and my old pre-rendered mashups. Same thing, SoundCloud.com/JIN-XS. But most of my stuff is on Hear This now because SoundCloud isn't really DJ-friendly like it used to be.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Thanks again for listening to the first hour of our podcast. In the second hour, we will continue the interview with Gen XS, as well as play you some more music that you may or may not have heard. Try and keep it varied here on the Mixtape Preservation Society. But we're going to close out this hour right now. We appreciate you listening. And if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line. You know how to get in touch with me. And that's it. See you in an hour.
Did you really want?